Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for Thursday, May 27th is just moments away. But before we do this, we need to thank our sponsors. Sponsors like SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana, the Chicago Federation of Labor, our sponsors, and the Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for all things there is to know the city of Chicago. Where to go, what to do, what to eat, what to drink, what pot to smoke. It's true. They talk about it. And so much more, including politics, political columns from our very own Ben Jarofsky, Maya Duke-Masava, and so much more. Chicago Reader, ChicagoReader.com. And you can become a Ben head, ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky, J-O-R-A-V as in victory, S-K-Y. Find out how you can help the Ben Jarofsky Show. Oh my God, Frank is back on the live stream chat. Frank, we were worried sick about you. Welcome back, Frank. And the Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. It is Thursday, May 27th, and live from my apartment and his attic, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, we welcome back Mark Sims and Harish Patel. And now your host, Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Bernie Gate Thursday, and here's why. Breaking news all over the place this morning. That's the bottle smashing.
Oh, it's like a bar fight.
Sounds like a whip. Oh, God. Well, we'll edit that out of the podcast. Anyway, yes, I was going to do the latest Donald Trump scandal, which has to do with allegations. They're just allegations, ladies and gentlemen. This broke in the Washington Post today that Donnie Trump in 2008, I want to say, offered a bribe to Senator Arlen Specter to get him to drop the congressional investigation into Deflategate. Not Deflategate, the other scandal, Spygate, with the football team from New England, New England Patriots. But no, then Frank, the aforementioned Frank, sent me a text this morning about Bernie Sanders, the latest Bernie Sanders scandal. And I just had to take the deep dive in this. So we'll get to that Donald Trump scandal some other time. I know it's not going anywhere. All right, we'll do the deep dive on Bernie's scandal. But first, a confession. Everybody knows this, but I got to say this up front. Yes, yes, yes. I'm a big Bernie fan. I voted for him twice. In fact, every time I see his name on the ballot, I punch it. It feels kind of liberating, at least at first. Like back in 2016, it was like the unacceptable behavior. Everybody in my generation, my baby boomer generation, was voting for Hillary Clinton. And they were telling Benny, you can't vote for Bernie. It's irresponsible. He can't possibly beat the Republicans. You want Donald Trump to be your president? Is that what you want? You got to vote for Hillary Clinton. And I said, no, I'm going to do what I want to do. And so instead of being this like broken down old war horse of an old guy columnist, I felt young again. It was like 1975 and I was on the rocks listening to war, stepping in the darkness. Come on, D.
Well,
anyway. Dennis is like, I never heard of that song and I wouldn't know what it is anyway from your rendition. Anyway, by the time 2020 rolled around, voting for Bernie was so passe that even PC did it. Yes, that's right. Peter PC Cunningham, everyone's favorite centrist, voted for Bernie. Peter Cunningham, of course, is the brains behind Arne Duncan and Mayor Daley and Rahm Emanuel. And the answer to the following trivia question: if Mayor Daley or Mayor Rahm ever said anything remotely intelligent, who wrote the intelligent thing that they said? And the answer is Peter Cunningham.
Whoa. <Love you>, Peter.
Uh, By the way, as I do this, Mark Sims is coming in and out. It's like, it's kind of funny, folks. On Google Meet, he's in, he's out. He's in, he's out. Anyway, we'll get to Mark Sims in a little bit. Back to Peter Cunningham. And you know, I love you, Peter. By the way, great show with Peter, if I must say myself. Last week, I urge everybody to check it out if you haven't already. But anyway, the point is, Peter voted for Bernie this time around. So really, you can't say it was that, like, outrageous to vote for Bernie. Anyway, as we all know what happened, the Black voters of America, the Black voters of the Democratic Party weighed in and basically bounced Bernie from the ballot, largely because they took one look at him and said, there's no way that white people are going to vote for this guy. Let's be honest, Marcus T. Sims, you know exactly why Bernie Sanders lost. He could not get a majority. He couldn't even get like a, I don't know, a sliver of the black vote. And you're not going to win a Democratic nomination without it. And so it turns out that those voters were a lot smarter than me, because the man the Democrats nominated, Joe Biden, went on to defeat Donald Trump. And I'm not sure Bernie could have done it. So I was wrong and you were right. That's not where I was going with this. I'm going to Bernie Gate. A new book came out about Bernie. It's called Battle for the Soul, Inside the Democratic Campaign to Defeat Trump. So I guess the book's really not about Bernie, but that's not the point. It digs up some dirt on Bernie to make him look bad. Here's the deal. Bernie's an avowed Democratic socialist. He thinks that gazillionaires like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates should pay more in taxes. And as such, he's supposed to live in a cave and wear rags and ride a bicycle, and not a new bicycle, but a broken down old bicycle. And he's never supposed to eat out unless it's at Subway or McDonald's, because that would be hypocrisy. Because as everybody knows, lefties are supposed to live like monks, and not just ordinary monks, but dead broke monks. If you're a lefty, you're not even supposed to order wine. And I know this. I know this because I have dined out with centrists. I'll leave their names out of this, but I've dined out with centrists for lunch. Yes. And they love that part of the dining experience when we order, because that's where they get to make fun of me. So like, you know, if you ask the waiter, what's the special today? They go, oh, Mr. Democratic Socialist wants to know what the special is. Or if you order wine, they go, oh, Mr. Democratic Socialist loves his Chardonnay. And then they all laugh. Oh, those centrists, they got a million of them. Anyway, apparently Bernie makes more demands than your average, ordinary, even centrist. Apparently Bernie has, quote, a senator comfort memo detailing specifications for his travel plans. This excerpt, of course, was first reported by Fox News. I mean, duh. Fox News loves digging up dirt on Bernie. According to the book, Sanders prefers suites with bathtubs and king-size beds, which have to have a down comforter or another blanket in the closet. He preferred that the extra blanket be dark blue and made of cotton. What a bizarre. I mean, I'm just thinking about it. Like, specification, dark blue. What difference does it make what the color is? It's at night. The lights are off. You're asleep. I don't know. Maybe it helps him fall asleep, just knowing that the blanket is blue. Or maybe he sleeps with the light on. I don't know. Anyway, Bernie also insists that his hotel rooms be kept at 60 degrees, even if it means opening a window in the winter or manually overriding the the climate control. So, you know, of course, they're going to be talking about wasting electricity and wasting gas. Oh, some environmentalist he is, huh? The comfort memo also reported required that Sanders hotel rooms be stocked with green tea, Gatorade, and assorted nuts. No word about M&Ms. That's a line from the New York Post story that I got this from, which is actually not a bad line. Got to give him credit. So anyway, they're whacking away at Bernie. And you know what? It's all fair game. I'm not crying about that. In politics today, that's how the game is played. All attempts to make the other side look hypocritical, that's what you do. I understand. I do the same thing. But I'll say this. Compare the quote-unquote hypocrisy of Bernie to that of Donald Trump. Just give you one instance of it. Donald Trump waved the flag for the war in Vietnam. And then he got his daddy's doctor to give him an exemption to stay out of it. He spent those years partying like a rock star and then bragged to Howard Stern that the only thing he had to worry about was catching BD. And now he talks about how much he loves veterans, how much he respects the sacrifice they made. Yeah, none of us are perfect. None of us completely practice what we preach. But I got to say this, Republicans, your hypocrisy is a lot worse than ours. We got a great show today, everybody. A man who is not a hypocrite in any way, Mark Sims, is on deck. We're going to bring him on really soon. Yes, that Mark Sims. That Mark Sims turns down the heat when he goes to bed because he doesn't want to waste electricity. That Mark Sims never orders Chardonnay in a restaurant because he doesn't drink or anything like that. Harish Patel will be joining us at the second part of the show, an activist. He's going to be talking about the earned tax credit. Very important issue. There's a bill that's right now in Springfield. So we're looking forward to that conversation with Harish Patel. We're going to bring Mark Sims on after we take this break.
And now the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from his attic.
Podshow host Mark Sims, a regular guest on my show. Mark Sims is a host of his own podcast, and he has me on as a guest every now and then. So, Mark, before we get started, I want to thank you for the last time you had me on the guest. I think it was a week ago. And I've made a reference to the fact that I've struggled with dyslexia most of my life, or far as I know, all my life. And nobody picked up on it except for Mark Sims. Very nice of him. And he reached out to me and asked me about it. And so I remember it was a beautiful day. It was last week. I was doing my walk. Mark was making fun of me, as he always does, because I live in a neighborhood where you can go walking in. Without fear of getting shot, I guess. Although this is Chicago, Mark, nothing's completely safe. And anyway, it was just a very therapeutic conversation, Mark. And I enjoyed it, talking about it in a weird way. I got a lot of stuff off. So thank you for engaging me in that. And I urge everybody to check out that interview. Thank you, Mark.
Let's go to my Twitter feed. I mean, I don't want to promote Twitter, but we have to. Go to Mark Sims Chicago on Twitter. MarkSims Chicago. At Twitter. I mean, look it up. You'll find the interview. Now, I did not know, Ben, that you were self-diagnosed. I thought you had, you know, doctors looking at you. I thought you were, so you don't really know if you have dyslexia.
I don't even know. I'm just assuming that
you have symptoms of dyslexia.
Yes. But, it gotta feel like this. I mean, I just gotta think that there's something wrong because my whole life I've struggled with reversals. I've been really thinking about, I don't want to go too far with this because I want to get into the subjects we're talking about.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like when you ask me, well, Ben, if you struggle with this, how can you write? And I realized the way I go about writing is where I'll think stuff out of my head and memorize it. You know what I'm saying? Like the column I just did that I ran in the Reader about lefties being silent in the face of anti-Semitism was something I was thinking about, Mark, as I've been walking. You know what I'm saying? I think the lines come to me while I'm walking. I memorize them. And as opposed to, I think I would say most writers sit down and just, you know, in front of the computer and write it out. So we all do what we can with what we got. And the point of the interview that Mark's ultimate point, which I thought was a very telling one, was that without the support system I had from my parents, particularly my mom, I don't know where I would have ended up.
So, you would have been in jail, Ben. Jail. Prison. Benny J, breaking locks.
Locked up, as the song.
Yeah, locked up. I mean, it's serious though, because I think some of the criminals in Chicago, I'm assuming, have some form of dyslexia, and they never really got the support or diagnosed, and here we are. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. All right. Absolutely, you want to talk about neighborhood crime and low-income black neighborhoods in Chicago. That is where Mark Sims is at. He thinks about this stuff all the time. He writes about it. He sends me constantly, sends me emails on the subject, and he teases me. And let's just go into that. It's all good-natured, but the fact that I can walk in my neighborhood, but Mark can't walk in his neighborhood.
I can walk. I'm just scared to walk. I'm scared to walk in my own neighborhood. Yes, you can walk at your own peril. But you know, I was telling you, or was it you? I mean, I do the same. I was talking to Salim Wakil. I had Salim Wakil on my other podcast for African Americans. I'm like Lori Lightfoot. Sometimes I only want to talk to African Americans. None of y'all other people. Y'all got to wait. People of color only. But I was on 61st. I was telling Salim Wakil, and that podcast is on Mark Sim Chicago on Twitter. I was on 61st and King Drive. And a young lady was shot in the chest and the foot, I think, or something, leg. I don't know what happened to her because, you know, you move on to the next story, but it's always chilling, not chilling, but it's always, you know, you see the tape, you see the police, you see the news reporters, you see the helicopters, you're like, damn. In some neighborhoods, this goes on all the time. It's sad. Yeah.
It is sad. And we've talked about this on the show with so many different guests about crime in Chicago, what's going on. I believe it's not just Chicago anymore, but I believe that absolutely. We just put such, what's the word? Emphasis on retaliation. So I just think that's part of the mentality of folks in this country, and not just black people. Everybody's at that. You punch me, I'm punching you back, that kind of thing. But beyond that, there's no accountability whatsoever for the gun manufacturers for the damage that their products cause.
You sound like Lori Lightfoot now.
Well, no.
She blamed the judges. I forgot.
Yeah, Lori Lightfoot's thing, which, by the way, I got to thank. Another thank you to Mark Sims. We'll get into that. He sent me the email that I riffed on yesterday, Patrick Smith. And Lori Life. If it wasn't for Frank and Mark Sims and other people, I don't know what I would do. Ramona, always people are sending me stuff.
No, but it's like social media. Social media is so good because I know a lot of people hate social media. They say, get off it, it's ruining your life. And I understand those arguments, but it's a lot of articles, like your article I retweeted this morning. I will put it on Facebook later on. Everybody who loves Benny J should retweet his columns and retweet the podcast, which I always do. And because, like you said the other day, before I get back over to Patrick Smith and WBZ and Lori Lightfoot, you mentioned in the show that you're shocked to talk to people who still remembers you had a radio show.
Yeah.
And what you've been doing for the past 2.5 years. And so a lot of people need to be aware of your show. But Patrick Smith, well, the whole thing, you got to the details about Lori Lightfoot and everything. Lori Lightfoot is wonderful. I met her because of you. I want her to win again. I want her to win re-election. She says she's not going to do a third term right now, but if she gets to be a second term, unlike Jane Byrne, would be great. And I mentioned Lori Lightfoot. I think she's sincere, but she is, you know, part of the establishment. I get it. I like, and let me go far afield. That's what I do. Peter Cunningham was on your show. He was phenomenal talking about crime. And I wish it was more people. We have Father Flager, but it's not enough African-American leaders. And Peter Cunningham is not an African-American leader, of course. We don't have enough African-American leaders that say, we're going to end this crime. But it's hard because you have to teach people how to act. And it's like the CTU, your friends at the Chicago Teachers Union, they talk about wraparound services, and they're right. You have to have wraparound services because if you don't have a wonderful middle-class parent or a wonderful working-class parent that's really on you or really helping you, you don't have the schools helping you, you're going to fall through the cracks. It's like Lori Lightfoot. Hopefully she picks a new CEO of the Chicago Public Schools and the chief education officer. A lot of people leave the administration. She has two people she has to appoint. I forgot who was the superintendent when Jane Byrne was back. And I'm going, you know, so you have dyslexia. I have ADD, okay? So you can stop me anytime you want. But you know the
superintendent
stuff.
For Jane Byrne? Wasn't Jane Byrne, many of them. There were
whoever they put two white women on the board of education. Yes. And that was a big brouhaha. It was one of the things that got Jane out. That's a long time ago. You know that stuff better than I do. So the schools are important, and hopefully Lori Lightfoot handles this correctly, because I want Lori Lightfoot to have some people that run the public schools that don't let any, especially young men, fall through the cracks and come out of high school with no skills, no education, can't read. It's a travesty in this modern era. So.
It is a travesty. And before you made a quick tangent to the schools, let me just finish my point about the carnage in Chicago and throughout the country. Just the shooting yesterday in San Jose, 8 people killed. The weapons manufacturers will never be held accountable for that because they're exempt from product liability law. Jim Coogan has come on the show and talk about it. Maybe bring him back to have this conversation. Ace attorney Jim Coogan, who makes his living in cases like this, negligence cases or product liability cases, that kind of thing. So he knows the intricacies of the law that governs this. If you exempt the weapon manufacturers from laws holding them responsible for the carnage created by their products, then they'll have no reason or incentive whatsoever to demand that there be a limitation on the number of guns that are purchased to hold retail outlets responsible for who they sell their guns to. So it's just like, if there's no accountability whatsoever, it gets back to crime, Mark. We've had this discussion before. If the police department is not able to, if they're not able to investigate and arrest somebody and come up with the evidence to convict somebody for murder, what is the accountability on that end that would hold, might deter somebody from getting a gun out and settling a dispute by shooting them? So that's the question I've always asked. And in this country where we love the gun, you can't, that's different than Lori Lightfoot. Lori Lightfoot saying, well, judges are letting people out of jail that shouldn't be on the streets. They should be back in jail because they would shoot somebody, which is different than saying, I'll hold the gun manufacturers accountable. I got to give him credit. Richard M. Daley was for that. So you get my point?
Yeah, I get it. I'm more conservative than you are, Ben. So, you know, guns are one problem, but crazy people with guns are a real problem. And sometimes, I don't know the situation in San Jose, but some of these workplace killings, sometimes people can see it coming, but no one thinks it's going to get that bad, so they don't stop it. And you don't want to, what's that famous, you like movies, Minority Report with Tom Cruise or something?
Yeah.
You don't want to, I saw it, it was okay. But the point is that you don't want to get to the point where you start arresting people before they commit crime.
Yeah.
But sometimes we see people in our own family, they're ticking time bombs, you know, and you know that it could end poorly, but what do? Do you turn them in now? Who do you turn them into? I mean, and it's disgusting. Don't get me started about African-Americans. I mean, you go to, marksims.com on Twitter. You can see Celine Moore. We talked about our problem is we have a lot of problems. But other people don't really realize we're descendants of the slaves. And if people don't understand what it means, see, the Mexicans know they're Mexicans. And the Koreans know they're Koreans. We're still arguing about who's black and how to be black. You know what I'm saying? I have some black self-hate. I got a lot of it being in this culture I have to deal with every day. So sometimes black people kill each other because I don't like my black self, and you're black, I'm going to kill you. And people say, well, middle-class black people don't kill each other. Yes, but middle-class black people move away from the lower-class black folks. Don't get me started. And then, of course, those lower-class African-Americans don't have role models, blah, 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 blah. It's a vicious cycle. But we do have a lot of self-hate, and we have a lot of pathologies, and a lot of it's that we don't really agree on who we are as a people. When I was a kid, we were black. Think about that, Ben. You old enough probably remember when we were Negroes.
Yes.
I predict another 50, 40, 50, 60 years, not maybe 50 years from now, African-Americans, hopefully I'm around at 100-something years old, that African-Americans won't be calling themselves African-Americans. We'll probably be called Americans. They will say how much African ancestry we have. We say, I'm American. Yes, from America, I have 50%. I probably have 60%, 70%. I don't have 100%, that's for sure. And most black people don't have 100% sub-Saharan African blood. So we'll probably be just Americans another 50 years. I'm not saying that's good or bad, But I'm talking about the evolution of us as a people and a city and humanity. And we have to think about 20, 30 years down the road. And that's how you stop crime today. I mean, not today. 10, 20 years. You have to have a 10, 20 year plan. And it really comes down to mental health, public education. It comes down to those wraparound services, the CTU. We can end this, but we have a racist society. I hate saying racist. I hate going there, Ben. I hate sounding like Malcolm X. But this country's racist. That's why we love guns, man. Because we have Negroes, right? They took care of the Indians, Native Americans, or Native indigenous people. But the slaves, you know, I think even in the South, I think black folks, what? We were half the population after the Civil War, during the Civil War, like 4 million. We were half the population. So we've always had Negroes and people, and the Republicans still play that game to this very day. They still play the Willie Horton game. Those Negroes are coming to get you.
Yes.
Watch out for those Negroes. Those blacks. Those African Americans. They're killers.
By the way, that was an incredible riff that you went on, and I just want to annotate a little bit of it. One part of it, my beloved Chicago Teachers Union. Mark struggles with the Chicago teachers. I'm just going to put it out there. Mark struggles with them. He's got
issues. Yeah, I got issues. Chicago issues.
I love the Chicago Teachers Union. They're not perfect. I criticize them from time to time. Went way in too strong for Tony Preckwinkle over to Lori Lightfoot. Tony didn't deserve the accolades you gave her, and it wasn't smart strategy to alienate Lori. That said, they're the only ones. They are the only ones on a regular routine basis advocating for the kinds of things that Mark Sims was just talking about, how we need the quote-unquote wraparound services. And I'll say this, Mark. Whenever they do that, they're maligned by the powers that be in this city. They are maligned. Everybody says when there's some horrible tragedy in the city of Chicago that it just forces everyone to pause. You know, like Adam Toledo getting shot, a 13-year-old getting shot in an alley. Just people pause and say, oh, my God, how can we come to this? What we should do? We need this, that, and the other thing. It's all things that the Chicago Teachers Union has advocated for and has been, what, maligned, mocked for doing so? So I'm just saying, Mark, I know you got your issues with the Chicago Teachers Union for various reasons, which I don't really understand, but you got to admit they are the only group that's consistently using whatever power they have to push for the very programs that you believe in. Do you acknowledge that?
Yes, I acknowledge a broken clock is right twice a day. So you know, I'm a quasi, and I say, well, I'm not quasi. I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but you're not mad at me I haven't taken a shot yet. You know what I'm saying?
We've not had this conversation. You just mentioned it to me in passing before the show. So what? Why haven't you had the vaccine yet?
I had, because I'm a recalcitrant person by nature. I want to fight the system. No, my problem, I'm not saying the vaccines are good or bad. You've gotten your shots, right?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding?
But you're part of the elderly community that needs to get the shot, right?
That's what. By the way, I just want to say one thing. I got to get this off my chest. This man's only 4 years younger than me.
Don't tell your age. But the point is that, but see, the thing about that, we're both baby boomers, but you were born in the 50s. I'll sing you that song. The Police had a song, Born in the 50s. I'll sing you that song.
Okay. Go ahead. All right, no.
But to get off the subject, seriously, my problem with the whole vaccine is that my problem is the manufactured consent. They're trying to get everybody to take the vaccine, although they know everybody's not going to take it. But the manufactured consent of it, that's what I don't like. I'd rather have a broader conversation. Bill Maher had a great conversation with the integrative medicine type dude months ago or last year on his show. But of course, Bill Maher has contracted COVID-19. The point is that you can get it. I have no problem with the vaccine itself, but we don't have that conversation of who's got it. I think I got it earlier. Do they have antibodies? The people who don't get it, will they actually at some point get the coronavirus as it mutates? We don't have a broad discussion. We don't have different. I think Trump got some medicine. We don't have an over counter medicine. So even prescription medicine, that if you get it, you don't have. If you don't want to take the vaccine and you get COVID, you can take these medicines over the counter, Tamiflu. My problem is that everything's vaccine. then again, I'm one of those people that believe that vaccines is one of the reasons why we have a lot of autism in this country. Don't get me started. Okay.
All right, please. I am not going down that road.
What do you do, Dennis? And then don't put vaccines into the description, because if you say anything bad about the vaccines, man, you get. As what's one of the Kennedy sons? What's his name? One of the Kennedy sons. He's like tarred and feathered.
One of Bobby Kennedy's sons.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I believe everything he says about vaccines, but he's a persona non grata, you know.
Look, Mark, I've known you for 20 years.
Many years.
Yes, you go look at that first article I wrote about you. Okay. I hate to say it, young man. Yes, we're getting old. So here's the deal about Mark Sims. And I share a little bit of this. I must confess. When everybody's going left, he goes right. When everybody's going right, he goes left. He's got this knee-jerk instinctive reaction to be just outside of the mainstream. And I can understand that. I feel those same tendencies. But denying yourself the vaccine, I hear you manufacture consent, Noam Chomsky. All of a sudden, you're a lefty. That's a Noam Chomsky.
Noam Chomsky, manufacture consent.
Yeah, I love Noam Chomsky. But all of a sudden, that's the issue that you're going to defy? Like, everybody's got a cell phone. The only person I know who didn't have email was my father. May he rest in peace. He would give you a whole lecture on how the civilization is eroding because of email. I didn't see anybody stopping. I didn't see anybody. You know, everybody's getting email. And it, you know what's so funny? If you're against the vaccine, now that they're like bribing people to get the vaccine. And I think it's Ohio, the state of Ohio, which I'm going to refrain from making fun of. I believe they got I think it's Ohio. $1 million. You see this?
Yeah, people won.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, people. That's your price? This is some guy. You're going to throw away your inner convictions for the chance to get $1 million? Because you don't have the guarantee, Mark. You don't have the, and how about, here's the other thing about Lollapalooza. They're going to make, I believe, getting into Lollapalooza is going to be contingent on either getting the vaccine or being testing negative.
Yeah, no, I agree. I have no problem with that. You should be tested and say, hey, I passed the test. Can I get inside? And they say, cool, we'll get inside. I go, I don't know, but the main thing
is, you throw your convictions out the window just for Lollapalooza. That's just what I'm saying.
So I just want to have a robust discussion. That's all. I mean, you can have a robust discussion that, let's say, the states like Indiana, who didn't want to, Texas didn't want to hurt the economy, were more looser. Less restricted than J.B. Pritzker. What are the rates there? Who's gotten sick? I just want a more robust discussion. That's all. Okay. And this country we don't have because we want manufactured consent. But then again, if I was in charge, you need manufactured consent to keep the herd, the cats, you know, the herd, the animals, and make sure they act right. You do need that. It's a catch 22. Like I heard my buddy, Marlo Anderson was really good on your show yesterday. And he talked about, on some days he's atheist and some days he's agnostic. Right.
Yeah.
And so organized religion, you know, when we're talking politics and religion, being, which is not good. I'm not a big fan of organized religion, but I know you have to need it because it is, for one level, it is an opiate of the masses, and you have to have it because you some type of belief system. Otherwise, you have chaos.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I understand how this works, but somebody's got to say, you know, let's think about this. Let's not rush. And guess what? When it's all said and done, being, you know, maybe only, 70-something% of the country? Okay, let's say 85% of the country is going to get the vaccine, but one of the vaccines, but maybe 15-20% are just not, no matter what happens. They know it, you know it, and hopefully we get herd immunity because people like you are going to take the shot.
Yeah. Well, by the way, reference to Monroe Anderson, he was on a roll yesterday, and I said this to Mark before he went on the air. Monroe has reached that part of life where he doesn't really care what people say or what they think, and I really respect that. I'm almost there myself. I'm almost there. And Mark is almost there as
I'm
well.
I'm a good 15 years away, but that's a great feel. I like talking to people in their 70s because they're there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I still care about what people think about me, which is disastrous. And you in some respects, when you don't give a F, man, yeah, you're so free. I ain't there yet, Ben. Monroe's there.
Monroe's there. And we mentioned this, the comic who just died, Paul Mooney, was there. He's been there. He was there for the last 10 years of his life saying anything outrageous. All right. I got to ask you about Lori Lightfoot her, what was it? Her announcement that, you know, I thought it was when you settle through the fine print, I thought it was kind of like overplayed totally. Cause originally it was like, I'm not going to talk to white reporters. That's how I was first put. Then it was, well, it's really, she's going to give preference, to, people, reporters of color, in interviews dealing with her second year anniversary. You get what I'm saying? I'm like, are we kind of broken this out? But anyway, I gave a shout out on the show when we were discussing it, or actually Dennis gave it. Hey, Mayor Lightfoot, if you're going to give preference to reporters or to journalists of color, reach out to Mark Sims. So I just wondered, Mark, have you heard from Mayor Lori Lightfoot?
Wait, people? I'm working on Mayor Lori Lightfoot. I'm sending an email, sending her letters. I need to work some back channels, like people like Ben. Like, I'm trying to get former Governor Pat Quinn on the show. I'm working some back channels with people I know, but it's going to work itself out. Wink, wink, nod, nod, right?
Well, I think Pat Quinn will be an easier get than Lori Lightfoot. But I got a kick out of it because Mark does have, I always tease him about this, he has a podcast that's basically for black people only,
only because black folks got mad at me because I had people like Arnie Duncan and Paul Vallis on the show. I had a bunch of white folks on my show. Then of course black people get mad. You can't make everybody happy, so I had a podcast for them. Now of course, yeah, you know, you can't make these people happy, but sometimes you have to have a podcast that, because we do speak English, that is really targeted for African-Americans. It's like right now the issue that is fewer African-Americans in the state of Illinois going to college, high school kids going to college. So most people don't want to hear that damn. They don't care because their kid's not African-American. What do I care about that? So some issues you really have to target to the African-American community, and I think all people understand that.
All right. Well, so when you finally get Lori Lightfoot to be a guest on your podcast, you're going to have her on just a few questions, or for Black People Only podcast?
No, she'll be on Just a Few Questions, the general public podcast. Then I'll say off the air, you know, if you ever get another, we talk again, let's do the other podcast. I'm having an elected fish on the show next week, and we're going to start her on the general public podcast. And then later on, we're going to have our own Just a Few Questions podcast, and we can talk directly to our people.
My guess is that that official you're having on next week has the initials J.
I don't jinx it. She's an older woman. I had Maria Haddon on the show, and she was phenomenal. So I'm very happy to get this young lady on the show. There's a lot of aldermen probably wouldn't do my show because, you know, how many listeners you got? Who are you? You know, African Americans, we got some real issues. Yeah. But Ben, you're the man. You know that. You can come on my show anytime you want.
All right. So the legendary Harish Patel has connected. That's always a miracle when my guests connect through Google Meet. I'm always stunned and pleased. So we're going to take a break and then bring Harish. But Mark, before you go, I asked you to do this. Part of our bonus drop this week. Actually, I'm inspired. I'm just feeling very nostalgic. And so I'm just going to take the deep dive. I'm going to do like five parts series on the year 1971. Why not? And it all began with Mick Dumke said, he's talking about how the greatest records ever produced were in 1971. So we'll start with that. Oh. But then Sergio Mims is coming on. We're going to do the best movies. We're going to do politics and sports. Ali Frazier. I'm going to have a whole show on Ali Frazier, 1971, perhaps the greatest fight of all time. But Mark, your assignment was to give me your three favorite records from 1971.
I went through it. I can't, but we talked about earlier. Let's do the 71. I think you mentioned Shaft was 71.
Yeah.
Now, I remember seeing Richard Roundtree at the Black Expo back at the old International Amphitheater back in the 70s. Had to be 71, probably 72, right? I was 70. I think I made 9 years old in 71, somewhere in 71, 9 years old. Now, I did like 30 something, 40 years later, 50 years later, I drove Richard Roundtree when I was a limo driver, which was phenomenal. So that's your hook. Richard Roundtree, Shaft, I think that was 71, 72, which I saw at the drive-in when I was a kid. My parents took us to the drive-in. Well, we were always in the back, me and my brothers in the back, parents in the front, and we would always fall asleep. But before I fell asleep on Shaft, I saw him in the shower with that white woman. And I was like, that was good, man. I wasn't even 10 years old. I said, damn, he in the shower with a white woman. Yeah. That's a whole show. Showering with white women. Let's talk. That should be your next show.
That'll be another show. I don't know if you're like. All right. Mark Sims, thank you very much. Shaft is as good a spot as ever to end this particular portion of the interview, because Harish Patel will tell you that's his favorite song from 1971 as well. And we're not even going to take a break. We're going to go right into Harish Patel because it would only be fair. He's been a very good sport sitting through the last 5 minutes of my interview with Mark Sims. I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you for your favorite songs from 1971. He's a millennial. It was like 15 years before the man was even born. So he probably doesn't even know any songs from 1971.
That's fair.
We're all about business. So welcome to the show, Harish.
Thank you, Ben.
All right. Before we get started, tell people who you are, what you represent, and then we'll get to why you're here. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you, Ben, for not only having this, but hosting me. And let me talk a little bit about our work. I am Harish Patel. I'm the Director of Economic Security for Illinois. And we run a coalition of over 35 organizations, union folks, foundations, advocacy organizations that think about economic security for Illinois, ultimately. And we work both on policy organizing, policy analysis, advocacy, all the way down from Springfield federally and locally. And, I'm hoping we can get a little deeper into the problems of inequality in Illinois and how we can fix it.
Yes. All right. And so in particular, there is a bill that is, I guess it's in the Senate right now. No, it's in both chambers, the House and the Senate, having to do with the Earned Income Tax Credit. As soon as I say this, Harish, I have the feeling that people are tuning me out. And this is a constant in my life, if I may use you as a therapist. Whenever I talk about issues about inequality, generally they're financial issues, they're municipal financing issues, they're tax issues. The system is very complicated. And in part, I've always believed that it's complicated just to perpetuate the social inequities that already exist because people stop paying attention at a certain point. So that's my way of saying we're going to be feeding you broccoli, ladies and gentlemen, and I want you to eat it because it's very important and healthy for you. So let's talk about the tax credit. Go ahead. Give people an introduction to it, Harish.
Yeah. And Ben, I think more and more people are going into eating their veggies and broccoli nowadays. Politics has gotten sexier and sexier. Taxes are getting sexier and sexier, and I'm actually here for it. To start off, I think it's important to say that America and Illinois already had a lot of inequality. I mean, nobody is under a rock thinking that that doesn't exist, right? So we have a pretty messed up economic system in some ways that are leaving a lot of people behind. And Illinois is not any better than any other state. So we got a lot of problems when it comes to inequality and just deep poverty. And it's like, look, even if you're not poor, this actually impacts you. Because a lot of the times, we all pull in our taxes. Well, not everybody pays taxes, but the majority of the population does. Even the middle class is paying taxes. And if we don't actually get people out of poverty, well, guess what? People have to keep paying taxes to keep paying for those, right? So it's actually, even if you are not getting and receiving some of this, you probably should pay attention because you should know the tax code and maximize your impact from the tax code because it governs every aspect of our lives. So for us, the bill that we put together, it's called Expanding the Earned Income Credit. And for folks who don't really pay attention to tax code much, at least understand that you all just paid taxes on your income in May 17th, right? That was your tax day. Well, when people pay taxes, you probably see a bunch of tax credits that, you know, if you have a child, you're going to get a tax credit from the federal government. Well, one of these are called the Earned Income Tax Credit that's been around for 50 years. And what it ultimately is a tax relief or a tax benefit for people who are making less than $60,000. And if you have dependents, let's say you got one or two or three dependents, you get a little bit more because the government is saying, we know that you don't have enough money. Here is some money back that you already earned back to you. Illinois is one of the states that actually has a matching. So, you know, if you get a federal government to give you $100 in Illinois, you get $18 more from your state government. So because we have a match of 18%. Well, that match is, you know, helping about 1 million people. But there's a lot of people that are being left behind. And so what our bill does, it expands that earned income credit in the state of Illinois so it can be accessible for people who are filing with a 9-digit number called the ITIN. They're not filing with a social security number. They're filing with an ITIN number and for people who are providing care. And so that's what the bill does. Caregivers and ITIN expansion.
Okay, so let's deal with that first category. The people who are not currently eligible. And why are they not eligible?
So this particular tax credit that I'm talking about, the Earned Income Tax Credit, has been around for about 50 years. When it was officially sort of formalized in the federal government, the world used to look a lot different. Work has changed, but the tax code has not kept up with how work has changed. So originally, it was made for people who are 25 to 65. The assumption is that as you get closer to 25, you're going to get married and have kids, and therefore you need more money and support from the government. But if you're 23, you are not having any kids. Or if you're 19, you're in college getting your degree. Over 65, the assumption was you don't have to work. You got all the other support programs, Social Security, Medicaid. So it was built for that. But sadly, we have 65, 66-year-old people who are working because we didn't take care of them. And same thing at 19, 20, people sometimes do have kids at 19, 20, 21, and or sometimes they're supporting their own family to get through tough times. And for most people, there's not a single person I know in Illinois at this point who doesn't know somebody who's been affected by the pandemic somehow, right? And so this inequality that already existed for a long time and left people behind is really now leaving people behind because of the pandemic. And so that's like the people who used to be taken care of are 25 to 65 year old with kids. We want to expand it to people who are 18 all the way up to, you know, unlimited age. There should be no age cap. And then it's folks who are filers with the ITIN number. So they're paying taxes, they're working. They don't have a social security number, so they file with what is called an ITIN, individual tax identification number. They're paying taxes in the federal government, they're paying taxes on their income tax in the state, but they don't qualify for any tax credit. And so we want to make sure that those folks who are paying into the system get their money back, and especially because we need it. You want to do economic recovery, well, people got to have money to spend money. You got to be able to pay the rent, got to pay those fees and all the red light ticket cameras. But if people don't got that money, they're not going to be able to pay for it.
And why don't they have social security numbers?
Some of these folks are immigrants, undocumented folks. Some of these folks may be here on a different kind of visa, but they work and they're paying taxes. And some of these folks are paying taxes for 10, 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And the federal government doesn't allow them to file for this. Five states in the United States have included ITIN filers to be able to be eligible for tax credit. Sadly, we're not one of those five. And hopefully we will become the sixth state in the nation that allows that. The other part of this is we want to make sure that parents who have children under the age of six also get this. Right now, they get it, but it's a very small amount. And we want to make a base credit of $600 because, same thing, everybody knows how tough this past couple of years have been on parents. You're trying to take care of somebody at home, or you got two kids, one in school, but they're all homeschooling, and people, you know, a lot of people had to give up hours at work. That has a burden on Illinois families. And what we're saying is if you got a kid, let's at least get you $600 over the year from your state government because you have a child, because we know the cost of living, cost of childcare has gone up. Mm-hmm. Same thing about elder care. So if you're taking care of your parents or grandparents, and many of the generations, what we know is some of these people are taking care of not only a child, but also an elder in the same household, right? So you got a 75-year-old parent and a 4-year-old. We're saying, let's make sure that those people who are spending their resources or have to cut their hours from work because of the pandemic and or because you got to take care of these people are getting at least a minimum credit of $600.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then before I get into some of the political ramifications of all this, let's just talk about caregivers. You mentioned caregivers. So let's finish that up before I get to the political questions. So yeah. How are caregivers affected by this proposed bill? Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I'm just amazed that we don't have a better system for taking care of all these people who are, America is not a good place in some ways to be able to raise children. You know, it's so expensive. Childcare goes up every year. I have a lot of family members, a lot of friends who are having, you know, younger kids. And it's like, man, they're paying $1,500, $2,000 just to provide childcare, not all the other associated costs to having a child. So that's sort of the aspect of childcare that we want to at least support families by giving them a little bit of a bump in their income. And ultimately, this is not a bump in their income. It's bump. It's their tax money going back to them. And there are folks who, you know, a lot of us would agree. If you're taking care of a person with disability at home or an elder person, right, a grandparent or a parent, or for some people, it may be a spouse, we believe that the government should do something for you. And I know that we all want our government to work for us. And this is one way that our government is saying, hey, you're working, you are paying taxes, but here's a little bump for you because this past few years, this past few decades have been very tough on everybody.
All right. Now, and as I said to you before we went on the air, Harish, a couple hours ago, we had this conversation. I didn't want to go full into it because I'll save it for the show. But I've written articles about the income tax credit. And I always, when I think about it and write about it and talk about it, it just strikes me as such a Republican concept. And by that, I mean, so much of the Republican parties, if they have any proposals to how to address any problem we have, and this is me speaking, not Harish. Harish is very nonpartisan. Okay, so this is me speaking. Don't hold him accountable for what I say, Republicans. So Republicans, their worldview is any problem, let's solve it by getting people to pay less in taxes. Okay, no, I got issues with that because you got to support government. If you don't pay taxes, then we can't support government. It's a lot harder to repave a road or pay a pension or whatever else you want to do with your money, pay it for schools if you don't pay taxes. That said, the Republican, this is their great philosophical approach to every single problem we have in our country. And the crowning achievement, as they see it, of Donald Trump's 4 years in office, the crowning achievement was the 2017 tax bill that gave a huge tax break to the wealthiest people in our country on the grounds that if you give them money that they would otherwise have to pay to the government, there will be money spent and the economy will boom. This is the most basic Republican approach to government. So Harish, you would think that they would be embracing your bill. So I want to hear from you that right now you have 100% support from Republicans in both the House and the Senate, because it doesn't get any more Republican than this. So do you have 100% support of Republicans in the House and the Senate?
Ben, I do not have 100%, but we are lucky to have Reb Demmer, who is the chief budget negotiator in the House on the Republican side, who have co-sponsored this bill. And you're right. Look, the history of this particular tax credit has been bipartisan for over 50 years. Even in Illinois, it's been bipartisan. And both parties and economists ranging from all the way to socialist left or all the way down to center and even conservatives do believe that there are few programs, right? That there are a few programs that both agree on actually is good for society. Now, I think your philosophical argument is true that maybe the small government versus big government is possibly one difference in how Democrats and Republicans think. But when it comes to the earned income tax credit, it actually has a really strong bipartisan history. And it's partly, you're right. Look, the Trump tax code, tax cut that you're talking about, didn't actually go to most people. It went to the top percent, right? And the assumption there was, the talking points there was, that it will trickle down. Well, it hasn't trickled down. Nobody believes anymore that it trickles down, okay? The complete opposite of that is the earned income tax credit or child tax credit, because it literally only is made for people who are closer, right? They're making less than $60,000. I guarantee you that it will trickle up, because what people do when you give them money on the bottom income tile, they're not investing in stock market, right? They're not building out wealth. They're not just giving it to their kids in the estate. What they're doing is spending that money in their neighborhood. They're buying food. Hopefully they're buying drinks. They're buying coffee, because that whole industry needs a revival. We all know so many small businesses are going to shut down. We want to make sure those folks have money to go to the barbershop, to the grocery stores, right? So that's the other alternative sort of way of thinking. We do want targeted tax cut that the government should provide. We also want to make sure that we're not taxing people into poverty. Mm. We should be taxing a whole different people so the government can function and reduce the tax burden and create some tax equity for the people on the bottom income tile. Mm. And Illinois, as you know, has an extremely regressive tax code. So EITC, the earned income tax credit, is one of the only ways you can lower some of the burden on the poorest amongst us. And also, none of us want poor people. It's not like we would want Illinois not to have a single poor person. Poverty is a policy problem and was created by us and therefore can be solved by us. And EITC happens to be a really simple solution that is part of the tax code, has a bipartisan support, one of the most effective ways to get people out of poverty. So let's expand it to people who need it.
Okay. Well, now we're getting to another thing. By the way, before we get into the other thing, I just got to say this. That was a great riff. Give you a lot of credit for that. And by the way, do you see, folks, how skillfully he played that nonpartisan thing? That's why he is who he is and I am who I am. I struggle to say something nice about Republicans. I'll say this. I've heard rich people, right-wing politicians criticize or whine, W-H-I-N-E, about this, not as opposed to drinking wine, about this program, because they're not benefiting from it. And they always try to act like, oh, man, the poor people are getting away with murder in this country because they get this earned income tax credit. We don't get it. And that's, I think this is interesting, because this is why ultimately I believe that you have to have not income-based programs. If you want to promote like college for everybody, there has to be no income-based provision to it, because if the rich people see that they can get benefit from it, they'll support it. That's just my humble opinion about human nature. Now, let's go back to the political end of it. I set you up when I said you have 100% support and you from Republicans in the state, and you said you have some, but you don't have 100%. And part of the reason, in my humble opinion, you don't have 100% is because it would offer this program to folks who are, quote unquote, undocumented. And man, I could just see the Trump commercials already, MAGA's commercials on this already. I have many beliefs how hypocritical they are if they were to do a commercial like that. But that's my guess about how the politics is being played out here. What's your thoughts on this subject? Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's very complex, and I don't know if I would paint that all Republicans or all Democrats when it comes to this particular program, because we have seen a lot of budgets actually have support for expansion of resources for undocumented families in Illinois. So yes, yeah, it may be on some extremes that you may be thinking that people might not want money to go to this group or that group. And you know, a lot of the times this is just a code for race or gender, right? And so we know, or sometimes it's a code for geography. Where do people live? The amazing thing about the earned income tax credit is that we did an analysis a few years ago and found that every zip code in the state of Illinois has earned income credit recipients currently, and our expansion will do the same. There's not a single district, House or Senate, that won't see a positive impact, a net impact from our expansion. And for us, that's there's a lot of very few things, few policies that can count on every zip code in the state of Illinois, every district in the state of Illinois having some beneficiaries, right? Also, look, IT filers are paying taxes. So if you want to be fair, just give them their money back, right? You don't want their money then. If you don't want to support them, then give them their money back. And we actually already have a program for you to do that. Use the earned income tax credit and give the folks their money that they've been paying in taxes for. Some of these folks have been paying the taxes for 20, 30 years without asking for much. Yeah. So for me, it's like, it's not only that, it's an economic impact. Look, you may not want the undocumented person to get that money, but let me tell you this. Those people are shopping in all kinds of businesses. There's an economic development. There's a multiplier effect that happens when these folks shop, pay sales tax. They're buying groceries from folks. They're kicking cabs somewhere. All of that is still really good for our neighbors. Nobody wants, look, if I had a neighbor who was struggling, I don't want that neighbor to struggle. If you don't have a moral reason, think about the economic reason, right? Like both, I have both. I believe that there is a moral imperative for us to make sure that our neighbors are safe and secure. It actually makes me feel safe and secure. And that's my self-interest in some ways. And there's an economic reason. You want a faster recovery, make sure everybody's included. It's the same way that public health folks, if your neighbor is undocumented, you don't want them to get a vaccine. Well, that's silly you, because guess what? That's not how this thing works, right? If your neighbor has a fire on their house and they're undocumented, and you're going to say you don't want that fire to be put down because they're undocumented. Well, guess what happens to your house after that fire? I mean, that's just a silly argument, right, Ben? And so for me, what we have seen is that most people get this. They understand that economic recovery doesn't happen when you do just pockets and targeted in this neighborhood or that neighborhood. You gotta, in this particular moment, we've had the worst economic crisis in 100 years or so. You're going to have to make it inclusive. You're going to have to make it equitable. You're going to have to pump a lot of resources and direct cash so people have the money to pay to spend that money.
Well done. You convinced me. Of course, I was already convinced. All right. So talk about the specifics. How will this pass? Will it pass as a separate bill or will it pass as part of the larger budget? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, at this point, we did have a bill, and we actually have 49 representatives in the House who are co-sponsor of the bill, and about 30, which is majority in the Senate, that co-sponsor this. And Senator Sims and Rep. Emmons are carrying our bill with the support of all the other legislators that I mentioned. What usually happens, and as you probably know, and some of your audience might know, is that a lot of the budget items that cost money end up being part of the big budget negotiations that are ongoing currently. So in the next day or two, Illinois is going to produce probably around $40 billion budget, give and take a couple of percentages. Our hope is that this particular aspect, the earned income credit bill, will be part of that budget. It only costs $130 million total, right? And that's over 2 years. First year is only about $60 million, and that's for the full thing. For the ITIN part is about $50 million. So it's not that expensive, and we know that that money is going to go right into people. So for us, we're really hoping that as part of the budget negotiation happen and the budgeteers are meeting, they keep in mind the needs of the Illinois families and households, and this particular bill will be part of that budget negotiation.
Well, then the bizarre end result will be, if it does pass as part of a budget, here's my prediction. Get your thoughts on this. It will pass because of virtual overwhelming, if not complete and total Democratic support, because it'll be Democrats who pass the budget. I doubt that any Republicans in our current political state, and he's a big word, so very, very, very few Republicans will vote for the budget because it'll be all hands on decks to promote this notion that somehow or other J.B. Pritzker and the Democrats are fiscally irresponsible by trying to even have a budget as opposed to Bruce Rauner. And so the irony of ironies, Harish, is that legislation that is so quote unquote Republican in its philosophy will be passed by Democrats who are doing the right thing by financing government and opposed by Republicans who will be looking toward for ammunition to use against J.B. Pritzker in the gubernatorial campaign, which is literally right around the corner. I know Harish is he's here talking policy, but he's also a political junkie. So he knows that there is a gubernatorial election right around the corner, 2022. That's my prediction. What is your prediction? Go ahead, Harish.
Yeah, I mean, governance is hard, Ben. And, you know, politics is easy in some ways. Governing is very hard. I would say that the budget negotiation always ends up doing this, right? It's a puzzle. A lot of folks are trying to make sure that some of their priorities are included. I mean, we are lucky that we have three Republicans in the House who have signed on to our bill. We know that they know the long bipartisan support. And we know that Reb Demmer, we just did a town hall with him a couple of weeks ago, really spoke to this, like his district, his neighbors are struggling. He can see that because folks just don't have money to put in. That's not, you know, he's not in an urban area, right? People are struggling all over the state in rural areas and suburban areas. I mean, we have a lot of folks who are seeing sort of their income completely go down to zero. And some of them are having a hard time even to keep their car or a house. So when Republic or Democrat, I mean, when district gets call after call after call with struggling neighbors, I don't think that's going to be an easy budget for them to be cutting this out or other services. People really, really need more support now more than ever. You cannot be making bets that somehow the federal government or somehow the recovery is going to happen from the free market, at least not now. And so I think this budget is going to look very comprehensive, hopefully. And who, you know, I hope that it's actually that not only the governor is happy, that I think the Republicans do vote for, or at least enough Republicans vote for it, that it ends up being a bipartisan solution, because many of the districts that Republicans represent are going to benefit, or at least know from the earned income tax credit, every district benefits.
Yeah. All right, Harish, if people want to know more about the issue, want to know more about your group, what can they do? Where can they go?
We're on the website. It's economicsecurityillinois.org. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram as the same name, Econ Secure, economicsecurityillinois.org. And, you know, they can find my contact information if they have any questions or concerns. They can email me there directly.
Very good. Harish Patel, and you did a great job. Thanks for coming on the show. I want to bring you back. Maybe next time you come on, we'll talk politics. He'll take off his non-political hat and put on his political hat. The man knows a lot about politics, ladies and gentlemen. We've been sticking strictly to this one issue, but he could take the deep dive on politics as well. So, Harish, thank you very much for coming on the show, and best of luck with you on this important issue, all right?
Thank you, Ben.
All right, that's Harish Patel. I also want to thank Mark Sims. Dr. D, before we leave today, I have to prepare for the bonus show that we'll be doing with Mick Dumke, where we start our series in 1971, which I'm so excited about. And we're, Mick and I are going to go through the music in 1971. He has worked so hard, Mick Dumke, on this list of his favorite records of 1971 that came out. And in his opinion, 1971 is the greatest year for pop and rock music of all time. I'll explain why. He's not the only one who thinks that, by the way. Apple is coming out with a documentary called 1971 on this subject. I don't believe 1971 is the greatest, but whatever. I got a lot of favorite albums from there. What are your favorite songs? I said three songs or three records from 71. This was long before you were born, of course, but you must have three favorite. You had time to do the research. Yeah. What are your three favorite? Go ahead.
I went and looked them up. 1971, three albums that came out. My first one, 1971. Oh, my, wrong button. My first one, 1971. Black Sabbath, Master of Reality.
Okay. All right. I'm writing these down, then I'll be sharing them with Mick Dumke. We also have Stacey Davis Gates's favorites, and a lot of other different people I've been reaching out to will be dropping their three favorites. Go ahead, D.
All right. I looked online. Like I said, wasn't born at all, so I had to look it up. Maggot Brain, Funkadelic.
That's on Mick's list. Okay, yeah. Great, great album.
And one of my personal favorite bands, the I think it was the debut album from Thin Lizzy, 1971.
That's not on Mick's list, but I'm going to add it to him. Let's see what he has thoughts about it. But you and he share your love for the Funkadelics, and I love them too, but they're not on my top 10 list. As you can guess, mine's a lot more poppy than either Mix or Dennis's. So thanks, D. I wrote them down, and I'll share them with Mick on that show, which we're going to be recording and dropping. We're recording about 2 hours and dropping this weekend.
And also tomorrow, we're going to be reviewing the week that was in Chicago and or Illinois news with Oh What a Week It Was.
Oh What a Week It Was, which is probably our most popular show that we do on a regular basis here. And this week, I just want to tease it. Yesterday's Chicago City Council meeting has given us a lot of material that is for certain about the insanity of our town. This is Dave Glowatz, of course, will be returning for the deeper dive. Another very popular segment of the show. When Dave Glowatz comes on, we take the deep dive into city council. So we're going to have a lot of good material from that meeting yesterday to talk about on Oh, What a Week It Was. Dr. D is already dutifully preparing for that. I want to thank Arish Patel and Mark Sims. It's always a blast talking to Mark Sims and for being such great guests. And, of course, the man, the myth, the legend, the pride and joy of Alton, Illinois, without whom the show would be possible, is Arish Patel. And Mark Sims will tell you, back home in Alton, they call him Dr. Doobie. Give yourself a raise, take it out of petty cash. See you tomorrow, everybody.